Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you today?
I'm very well.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, I feel that spring is slowly coming
unfolding
our way.
Yes.
I have green grass in my backyard.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of green grass around.
And I have gray snow in my front yard.
Yeah.
It's kind of that mucky time.
Yeah, and chickadees are making that.
I love the chickadees.
That, hey, baby.
Isn't it chickadee-dee-dee-dee-dee?
Well, yeah, but their mating call is, hey, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're like, hey, baby.
All righty, then.
Yeah, and February is the time when they start checking it out.
That's right. And Valentine's is coming.
That's right. The chickadees always tell you when it's Valentine's Day.
Aw.
Yeah, and then maybe you hear a very thrush.
That's your nature moment for the day.
Yeah.
Hey, we could baby.
we could have call lessons here or something.
Yes. All that art of birding. We should invite the birders because they know things.
It's
that we
fascinating.
Need to know.
I love bird stuff.
Yeah. Let's do that. I'm making a note.
Okay.
Bird.
Okay. Bird. Well, can I tell you a funny story about bird thingy?
Yes.
So, you know, we used to share a farm with my parents and they had their living room. It was down the hall and we had our living room. It was up here. And my dad is also a major birder.
Mm.
And he was listening to a CD of bird calls because he was trying to figure out something that he'd heard. But we didn't know that. And so, Eric, we're sitting in our living room and Eric's like, I heard I heard a varied thrush, and he's like opening the window and he's listening. He's like, that's weird. And then something else, he's like, oh, I heard a Bohemian waxwing. He opens the window. Darn, I swear I heard a Bohemian waxwing. We went through probably three or four birds before we realized that it was my dad listening to his CD.
Funny.
So yeah, they're pretty intensely interested in birds around my house.
And just like if you leave Twitter open, it tweets at you.
Oh, really?
And you hear it and you're like, what is that? It's not a bird. It's Twitter.
Yeah. I learned something about, I have shared our color podcast with my daughter because she is doing her discours on color.
Oh.
And so I said, I've got we did all kinds of stuff on color about a year ago. So I was sharing some stuff
a good show.
With her. And then she came back the next day and told me, guess what I learned? The color blue prevents you from producing melatonin. You know, melatonin is the chemical that makes you feel sleepy at night. So guess what apps are covered in blue?
Twitter
Facebook, Tumblr.
Oh,
like everything's got these blue back.
Awake.
Yeah. Keep you awake. Don't let you get sleepy.
Oh,
I know.
Are they evil engineers?
Subversive.
Color engineers?
Well, you know, it was just like that guy that, did you hear on CBC talking
They're
about
not.
The,
I'm just asking.
Well, he was talking about how designers are, you know, the Silicon Valley designers are kind of, you know, they make things to keep you addicted.
Well,
right?
It's engineered.
Because they have to, they have to appease the advertisers. The corporations are the ones that are driving the bus. And so they're trying to make sure that you just keep on scrolling.
Keep on keeping on.
So he was talking about, this was on Spark.
See, that's not good design.
It's not good design. And this guy said he wanted to get a group of designers together and have them sort of certified and in a sort of an attempt to make it that you're not taking advantage of people's addictive ability or, you know, their tendencies. And he's calling it time well spent.
Oh.
And so like an organic grower can
sort of
be certified.
Like ethical
yes,
design.
Exactly.
Like ethical oil and ethical
and so
gardening. And
So you can choose. You will at some point be able to choose an app that's certified by time well spent.
Wow.
And then you know that it's not preying on your you know, addictive abilities.
It is, but it all comes down to trust and relationships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It does.
It's true.
But there's personal responsibility too, right?
Oh,
just
but it's
shut the thing down.
I know, but it's so hard to do. It's like there's always something just underneath the next little feed, right?
That's what the CBC Change World is for. You turn everything off and then you watch a little bit of news and then you're good to go and go to bed.
Yeah. Well, ritual is important.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Okay, that almost leads into our topic for today.
And speaking of rituals, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, here, how's this for a segue? When you change the way you look at things, you change the way things look.
Wow. It's
Isn't
true.
That so true.
Yeah.
I know. I'm the queen of cliches. I have a cliche for every single scenario. You need a cliche.
Cliches are there for a reason.
Phone me. I've got one for you. But we read this week online a story in The Atlantic. Which is a very proper political magazine in the United States of America.
Oh, really?
Or the part of the United States that's still, you know,
proper,
thoughtful,
and
researched. And no, I haven't seen much evidence of that after Iowa caucuses and all that stuff, but that's okay. They're still there. We just don't hear about them much. Anyway, in the Atlantic, the story, the article is The Death of the Artist and the Birth of the Creative Entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So today's show, the topic is the artist as entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, maybe we could come up with a new word, like the artrepreneur. Or the entrepreneurist.
You are so good at this word development thing. Well, tell us about the word entrepreneur.
So it's obviously a French word.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of U.S. politics, I just everybody remembers when George W., who did many things, some of them, you know, not so memorable, but he said the problem with France is there's no French word for entrepreneur, but entrepreneur is a French word, right? Because at the time, really France and the U.S. like to fight, they're really good buddies on a lot of levels, but every now and then they like to kind of, you know, have a little fight. So entrepreneur actually means the person in between who takes and gives, right? Mm. Like entre means in between and preneur means to take. So
right.
You're like the exchanger of, right? And that's what business is. It's just an exchange of value. I'll give you this and you give me that.
Yep.
And I'll give you this and you'll give me that. And I would take it that much further and say that the artist is the original entrepreneur.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Because
you make stuff.
Yes.
And so you're exchanging the thing that you made.
Yes.
For something else.
Totally.
Makes sense.
I mean, before big business, before chambers of commerce, before boards of trade, before mm-hmm. Wall Street, before the stock exchange, there were artists.
Yeah.
Artisans who were sealed by the king to be able to journey from place to place and sell, you know, their swords.
Like the journeyman carpenter.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But then, so it in just, this article, they take us sort of way, way back in time.
Yeah.
And so in ancient times, it was all about the artisans and the guilds. And
The craftsmanship was everything for the artist. To be able to do it extremely well was everything.
Absolutely. And trained by a master.
Yes.
Kind of like the Star Wars Jedi thing. Really.
Yeah.
I think that's probably where he got that.
And it really was about the quality of the product. There was no like, oh, this is innovative or new or something we've never seen. And certainly not art for art's sake.
Oh, no.
It was about functionality.
Completely.
And really well made. Yes. And maybe very beautiful, but mm-hmm. it doesn't, like that was not top line, right? It was.
Right. And design started there too, because the artisans would have to brand their goods because remember in the Middle Ages, nobody read.
Yeah.
There's like zero literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have to put symbols on there. Good, so that they would know, oh, that guy, he's the guy I bought my sword from last time.
Yeah.
Right? Or he's the craftsperson who made my sword.
Yeah.
And it's been a good sword, so I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, in this article, it's so fully fleshed. It's just an amazing, diverse breadth of information, mm-hmm. historical and current, and I was just enthralled.
I mean,
by it
was a printout, beautiful. Isn't it?
Yes,
it's a printoutable.
It is, and a exchange around your office and talk about kind of thing. Yeah,
stick it on the lunchroom bulletin board.
Yes,
yes.
And so he goes way back and talks about the roots of the word art, and it is to just join or fit together. And he also talks about some of our early genius artists that we look back on and say, oh, it was just coming down through a vessel, like they're just a vessel for some divine spirit of everything. But no, those people just consider themselves very skilled craftsmen.
Yes.
Right?
And usually from a long line of skilled craftsmen. And, you know, let's say it, men mostly.
Yeah.
Right? Their father and their, right? Just like, just the word son, like Harrison, Elias and Jameson. I mean, because those are the three sons I know, but that word is, they're often tied to crafts, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So son of the plumber and son of the...
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, or the thing itself, right? Potter and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Potterson. Peterson is probably...
Yeah. Potterson. Well, but Potter. Like if your last name is Potter, it's very likely your ancestors made pots.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because actually that's what Kutchker means. In Czech historical thing. I know, right?
Pot maker.
Yeah. And we were just learning, because we're learning about European stuff, that Gaudi, Antoni Gaudi's dad was a coppersmith. made copper pots. So you kind of imagine that Gaudi himself, who became an amazing architect, would have learned that sort of voluminous shaping of metal and things, right? And that organicness that copper can do from his dad.
See, here's the thing. I don't know if people know this, but you're preparing for an adventure.
Yes.
You need to write this stuff down. This could be a wonderful, wonderful blog.
I know, but I don't know
if this could be like a whole new... I've never met a family who is preparing so carefully and thoughtfully for a trip. We'd be like, that looks good. I don't know. Should we go there? We'll see.
Well, we're doing... Each of us have four places that we're doing a presentation to the rest of the family on.
That is an article in the Globe and Mail, my friend.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
It's totally...
But I mean, Eric so just thoughtful. Did Gaudi because we're going to see the Sagrada Familia, right? And so it was so...
Your mind...
Blew. I know. And so it was so great to learn all these things about Gaudi. I did my presentation on Peggy Guggenheim, which I think I told you about before.
You actually do a presentation?
Yes.
And like with flip charts and everything?
Well, with a PowerPoint.
Really?
Yeah.
You do PowerPoint presentations at your house?
Yes, yes. We just hook the computer up to the TV and...
Yeah. You know this is unusual, right?
I didn't really realize it was that unusual.
Yes, extremely unusual. Help me out, listeners. Unusual. Wonderful. Unique.
Okay, well.
We're talking blog, book, Globe Mail, arts section. Just
sure.
Saying.
I'll get a man right on that. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, okay.
I'll help.
Oh, that's thanks. Fantastic. That's so nice of you, my publisher friend. Well,
that's fantastic.
Well, visuals are everything, right?
Gosh, I feel so inadequate now.
Okay, I totally lost where I was going.
Okay, so we were talking about Gaudi, his father was right. A potter.
Oh, the crafty thing.
Yeah.
The sort of like, yeah, where the craftsmanship kind of comes from. So I just wanted to point out that in this guy's article, even Bach, like even the composers considered themselves craftsmen.
Yes.
Like they had a job to do and they were skilled, you know, craftsmen putting these things together in a highly technical
way. Yeah, I don't think they had this illusion. Oh, so the illusion or the romantic illusion we have of the artist as the quiet, you know, genius who's kind of disconnected from the world or working in their studio and performing some sort of magic, you know, that I don't think that existed for them in that time.
No, we only look back on that and
like
say
we've romanticized it.
Oh, totally.
Right.
And like, even that, like that has come and gone, but that age where we looked back for like, you know, 100 to 500 years saying he was a genius, that's gone now too.
Like
we don't even,
I'm just thinking about that movie Amadeus and
how
he was portrayed as such a train wreck / genius.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe it wasn't like that at all.
Yeah.
Well, certainly he might not have. Or you notice how most artists are either, they're cutting body parts off or they're having affairs or they're alcoholics, right? We sort of romanticize. It's like they're a tortured soul valiantly fighting through the torture that is life.
Yeah.
You know, but they're really just no different than a plumber.
Yeah.
Or I don't know why we do that.
And in their contemporary society, they were looked at like, what? Yeah. Like,
because
you're
we rarely
a drain
say
on society.
Things like, he was a really famous plumber. His plumbing changed the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is terrible because, you know what? There are people, plumbers.
Absolutely, there would have been
who have
famous
changed
plumbers.
The people who are the Romans who invented aqueducts. I mean, they should get some cred for that, really.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we might have covered enough ancient history. We have to take
that
a break.
That electrical panel blew my mind. I mean, I'm only half joking. I think it's sort of sad that we don't give them enough credit.
You're right. Yeah. It's time to do some more research.
I'm doing it.
Okay, and we're just kind of going a bit back in time to kind of root out the origins of how artists became these sort of... ethereal genius, separate from the world,
tortured souls.
Otherworldly,
kind
of beings.
Now we're leaving the artisan, journeyman, craftsman, and we're going to talk about what started to happen in the, I guess, early 1800s, mid 1800s.
Yeah. Well, I guess,
sort of with the, I don't know, maybe even with the expressionists. Maybe that's maybe. When it started.
Yeah. So the art for art's sake kind of started to happen. I think that was probably the time, right? Where it was enough to be innovative and new and start something that had not been seen before. Mm-hmm. And then when we look back on it now, we're seeing, okay, that was the signal to this kind of change in society.
Mm-hmm. So the evolution of the quote unquote fine arts.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Because they weren't always fine.
No.
They were just,
I mean, we can look back on them as fine, but they didn't see that at the time.
No.
It was just about skills and techniques and doing things properly. So, so then obtained a spiritual prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And that carried on for 100 or so years. But then things started to change again. So instead of this noble genius artist being able to just show up in Paris and maybe live off alms in order to produce their genius artwork, now education was starting to be kind of a critical part of the process. And then as we've come into this past century or so, it became more institutionalized.
Yes, so it's an institution.
Yeah, so you had to be accredited in order to belong to certain societies, and then you had to obtain a certain kind of schooling.
Mm-hmm. And then, fellowships.
And then you get prizes.
Oh, yeah, of course, awarded this and awarded that.
And then as we get even more contemporary, there's MFA programs. So you got Bachelor of Fine Arts, Masters of Fine Arts, and then you could go teach your fine art.
Yes, you need, like, you had to have your badges.
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there was
serve on boards and
exactly you had to serve your time right on committees and boards, and you get a fellowship and you get your prizes, and then your resume gets built up and your CV looks beautiful and brilliant. So it became kind of all about the credentials that identified how successful you were and how well thought of you were.
Yes, and so many artists were university professors.
Yeah.
Even in recent times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still are, but.
So in a way, we lost our art for art's sake again, right? Because now it's like, oh, it's only art if you've got all of these credentials.
Yes.
Whatever everybody else is doing is just Sunday painters, right?
Right. Or, and Sunday painters who are extraordinarily talented with no training are called outsiders. And outsider art is huge right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this is, yeah, and then it kind of leads, well. Oh my gosh, we could actually spend another hour going down all the different trails.
Well, there's another
pop
topic,
art,
outsider
and,
art.
Yeah, exactly. And all of the dadaists, right? When they started to say, okay, this is like, we're just going to make fun of art, right? Marcel Duchamp with the urinal, signing at Armut. There we go, we're done. Yeah. There's art, right? Like there was a whole...
Just push.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. And it's buttons. The job, right? It's the job of the artist. But now it's just that there's been such a shift. And this guy's article is so brilliant in that talking about how the shift has landed us here today.
Mm-hmm.
And then the today part, I think this is one of the most interesting things, is that now we've lost that 10,000 hours kind of concept where we study.
So it isn't about the craft so much as about the credentials.
Yeah.
And sometimes craft and credentials aren't necessarily, there's quite a big gap.
Yeah.
Right.
And the credentials are losing their value now too.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're seeing, and this is
like going back to the plumbing or the electrician example, you can only learn plumbing from a plumber.
Mm-hmm.
And only a plumber can teach plumbing.
Right.
Whereas you can learn, I mean, I know, I teach at the college. I teach things that I'm, you know, if the plumbing metaphor were used, I am not a plumber, but I am teaching plumbing.
Ah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the tools are there and I have the credentials.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do an okay job at it. This is not a criticism of my employer but it's a totally different, right?
Yeah.
So, you mean you can learn all sorts of things from people who've never actually done the craft.
And done their 10,000 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. And then in the article, he mentions that graphic designers now...
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. I just want to point that out. I feel like I'm being uber-critical of the
And it's kind of the knowledge economy, right? I mean, we're talking about a time when technology is doing a lot of our... technology is doing our skill, I guess. Like it's conducting a lot of the grudge work of the things that made us really... The things that make us do high-quality work is now being taken care of by some technologies.
And sometimes we sort of... Oh, technology. And I mean, we have to remember that the population is getting older. This is not some sort of accidental monster that's creeping into our lives. It's a demographic result. It's a result of demographic pressures. So fewer people are entering the market, the labor market, than leaving it.
Yeah.
So that, what does that mean? We're going to have a shortage of employees.
Yeah, exactly. And but we also are going to have we are also going to have a shortage of work.
Yes,
right.
Well, that or so because technology is a response to the demographic shift that's happening, and we really will in our lifetime see more robotics, more specialization, more automation.
Yeah,
there you can't, unless you can turn back time and make people have more babies. That's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And fair enough. It's because we've had this time of growth where we just needed to make more stuff and yes. do more stuff. And we do need a time where we're going to have to just use the stuff we got. Mm-hmm. So there's going to have to be a shortage of things to produce
yes.
before we're going to see the worker for like, you know, that right. time so where all we this, got less workers. You know,
it's the slow growth or sloth or whatever they're calling it. That, you know, that's a reality too.
Yeah.
They're just, yeah. you know. Especially, well, I should say in the Western world. I mean, this is not a problem in the
other
parts of the world.
Yeah,
But then other parts of the world don't have the technical infrastructure like a power grid or,
right?
So there's other ways.
Okay, so getting back to the whole like artist as entrepreneur thing though, is that right now because of this, and that was what I was getting to about the 10,000 hours. In the article, he said graphic designers are coming on the scene after getting, you know, a couple of years of education. They're coming on saying they don't need the 10,000 hours, but they have 10,000 contacts.
Okay.
And that's what's giving them the cred to do the job and to expect the high pay.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, that's, to me, that's saying, okay, now we've lost the value of the expert.
Mm-hmm.
And so where does the artist fit into this? And that's why I've started to question what I do. Because now I'm part of, like, for me, I always felt like, you know, when somebody asks me, how long did it take you to paint that? I say 25 years because it's taken me that long to get to a point where I could do that inside of 2 weeks or whatever. Right.
But only an expert would know that.
Yeah. But that's the value of that is starting to go away. This whole concept of, you know, contacts and how you market yourself and where you put your stuff and who you hobnob with, it's become way more important than the expertise part of this and the time put in.
I would
part
say, of the okay, process. Okay, can you meet me halfway? I don't think the value of expertise is going away. I think it's just that we're settling. There's a proliferance of mediocrity is a kind of a harsh word, but we're sort of settling for.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean being an expert is less valuable. It just means we feel that maybe we can just get away with like 99 design, you know, 99 cent design or.
So is it the, do you think it's the striving for the cheapest everything?
Could
like
be.
Getting the lowest potential price so that there's more people available to provide that because they haven't placed a high value on their services because they haven't put in the 25 years.
No, I guess what I'm getting at is I don't like the thought that you think that your expertise doesn't matter or doesn't have value, because I think it does matter and it does. I know it matters and I know it has value. And so what I'm suggesting is we mustn't dole it out too thinly.
Right.
So maybe say I'm an expert, hardly, but you know, I've been in design for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should be more mindful of the scarcity. Yes, I could do that. And I could match that price. But the exchange of value is not there for me.
Right.
So it's nothing about the other party. It's about, you know what I mean?
Okay, but this is exactly where this is going, is that to specialize even further to create that value.
Yes. Right? Yeah, how much more, well, I don't know, how much more expert?
But
how I know, much full, I mean, you know, full is full.
Except that we live in a small community. Sometimes you have to be everything to everybody in certain industries, right? But if there's a whole bunch of people doing the same thing and everybody's scrambling to provide the lowest price, you have to specialize even more. You have to make yourself even more specific to provide that scarcity, right? Or to yes. get out the thing that's scarce.
Yeah. I really feel, why should we try to be all things to all people?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that just waters everything down, right? But I think in a small community, you feel like you have to be able to provide this service and that service and yeah. the other thing.
I feel like it's a strategic misstep to do that.
Yeah.
And this is it's my opinion, but I've actually come to that conclusion by horrible missteps, you know, like trying to be all things to all people mm-hmm, mm-hmm. has not worked out in many cases for me. It's just taken me this long to go, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I can't be all things to all people. Right. No is an okay answer.
That's right. Exactly where we are is the artist is no longer that kind of interpreter that can be just the creative.
No.
The creative source.
No.
And yes, we know that we've got all of the skills to be part of every other kind of business because we learned that at the World Economic Forum with the 10 skills that you're going to need yes. to be in the professional world. Creativity, problem solving, cognitive flexibility, negotiation, mm-hmm. like all those things that artists possess are part of the business world, or they're going to be needed in the business world. Yes. They're needed now.
They're already needed in the business world.
Yeah. So,
and already used in the business world.
Yeah.
You know?
So we have to kind of, those of us who are still calling ourselves capital A artists have to stop, I think.
Okay.
And say, okay, now we're actually part of a creative industry and we have to specialize a little bit and we have to think about what our actual skills are that we really have developed over yes. the years and what we can provide that's really of value. Yes.
Well, because we price based on scarcity. So yeah. if you don't make yourself scarce, you will never increase your price. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That was really big, Louise.
Well, no, but I mean, someone said to me once, and I said, yeah, I'm getting really busy. Like, I get calls all the time, and I got all these projects to do, and I might have to hire someone. And then someone said to me, no. Say no twice as often and charge twice as much.
Wow.
So I didn't do that.
But that was good advice.
But that was really good advice.
Yeah.
Because you create scarcity, therefore you create a price.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the big guys, the really big guys, get that.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I mean big as in uber successful.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Okay. Can you just say quickly, I know we have to go to a break right away, about what your company used to do compared to what it does right now?
Oh, so we used to do mostly websites.
Yeah.
Like 99% was websites. And I've come bumping into this and I'm thinking, I don't think I want to be part of the... I'm not sure I want to be in the website business anymore. And the reason is there's such a proliferation of everybody's a web expert, just like everybody's an artist, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I can't create scarcity in that environment. There are other things that I'm better at. I'm more than happy to work with trained local professionals who will partner on the process. But is the web the thing? I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's like a paintbrush. I don't want to use that size paintbrush anymore.
Yeah.
If you need it, fine. I'll make sure you get one. But I don't want to, because I just feel it's so full of, for one thing, it's way too complicated. We sort of missed the boat on some programming challenges. Like back in 99, there was a push to move everything to XML, which is like a single coding language.
Yeah.
So every Word document, every Excel sheet, every website, everything would have been in XML. And then we could have taken the XML and exported it into the different, you know, so everything would have been coded. But for some reason, because the web isn't really regulated, there's like HTML and PHP and this and that. And it's just kind of a train wreck. And I'm like, I don't want that train wreck anymore.
Huh.
And I don't know that I can provide scarcity in that train wreck, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not giving up. I'm just refocusing. I just need to get on a different track.
Yes. Yes. Well, it makes perfect sense. There's a lot of parallels to a lot of industry, what you're talking
about. It's a messy business.
Yeah. We're kind of dancing a lot around the conceptual parts of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there's a lot of thought.
We have some listeners chiming in. I just got a message from Warren saying cultural provocateur.
Well,
that is part of being an art entrepreneur.
Yes.
To provoke change.
Exactly.
Not like in a I'm going to punch you kind of
Yeah, and it's not the Picasso version either, where we just are doing big, like, you know, Guernica, where you're reacting to an event in history. It's very now, right? Mm-hmm. It's very immediate, and we're dealing with a world that changes every second. Mm-hmm. So to be a cultural innovator, to be a creative, the provocateur, whatever, it's because you have to be up to date. You have to know exactly what's going on and things that are needed and what's in demand and what's yesterday's news.
Yeah.
You have to be on it.
And the whole disruptive piece is important too. Like, I guess the whole web thing is, I don't feel that I can be a disruptive force because it's anymore in the web.
Yeah.
I still can be a disruptive force in terms of design and marketing and communication plans and
But yeah.
So in a way, we have to step away from things sometimes.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, you're feeling much like that.
I am feeling like that. I feel very much like, and I think part of it is because I'm recognizing more and more, and this has happened over the last 5 or 6 years, I don't have a lot of creative energy for myself when I get home from work. And I recognize that it's because I spend a lot of creative energy at work. Curating takes a lot of creative energy.
Yes.
Community projects take a lot of creative energy. So I'm creating all the time, all day. So I get home and I don't really feel like I have to get into my studio and create some more. I just sometimes want to knit or to bake scones or something, right? Like I'm just,
or to try a new chicken recipe. That's creative too.
Yeah. Right? And I mean, all those things are creative. It's just that I don't feel the drive to make art the way I used to. Like when I first graduated, that's all I wanted to do, right? And when you were asked that question that said, okay, if money were no object, what would you do? I'm like, well, I'd make art all day. I'd make gigantic paintings. I'd do this. I'd travel and I'd do, you know, plein air. And I had all these ideas that's what I would want to do. And I'm just kind of starting to recognize that maybe I don't.
But you know, if you were a runner or a hockey player or, right, so say you're a runner, first you do your 5K. And you keep doing 5K and just keep doing 5K.
But you're
going to do your half marathon.
Yeah. You got to move on.
So ironic coming from me.
You got,
but
you got to evolve.
Right. You have to evolve. And then you do your marathon. Mm-hmm. I always feel bad for runners who do the marathon. Maybe they do it twice, three times, five times. Then what?
Yeah.
What do you do now? Triathlon?
I don't know.
Right.
I know.
Like, so this
there's
striving,
always gotta be a next.
Right? That's really what the human
engine
is about, is striving to always beat the record or solve for X, right? So, you know, maybe you've solved for X. X equals this. Okay, next equation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, maybe I'm just ready to deal with this in a different way.
Yeah.
Deal with my creative industry, you know, differently.
Yes.
Become a different kind of expert.
Yes.
Based on the experience I've gathered so far, I can move forward.
We'll move that expertise forward to the next.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But okay, so getting back to the website thing.
Okay.
Now, this is another thing that was dealt with in this lovely article, was that every creative seems to be on a website. Every creative is selling their wares, selling their product on a website. And if you don't have a website, you're not selling. Like, that was the point. So that is another sort of the retail aspect of anybody in the creative industry is kind of being forced into a bit of a box. You don't have the same kind of business model. You can't get a storefront and pay $1,000 a square foot for your space. It's not $1,000 a square foot. I understand that.
No,
but, but it feels like a lot if you're
it might be in some places.
If you're a potter or if you're a stained glass artist or whatever, like, you know, to rent your own storefront and try to sell your wares and pay the rent and the bills and still be there and not producing in your studio.
Well, I mean,
is unrealistic.
Well, but you just have to challenge the entrepreneurial model. Right.
Well, that's where we have to be more innovative in our space use. Mm-hmm. And that's where towns, municipalities, and business owners have to kind of step up and help be innovative, utilizing the artists that are already in their organization to make innovative space
Land planning and
cultural
precincts. And I don't know that we'll ever be quite that big, but who's
well,
to say?
I know. Well, this is the issue with Salmon Arm. We're kind of little for a lot of that stuff. It would be, you know, in bigger cities like, say, Toronto, where their entire creative, you know, cultural districts rise out of low-rent areas.
Yeah, and it's not accidental. It's usually started by some innovator who pushes into a neighborhood. But then the land use planning, all of those mechanisms come into place after, right? So, but somebody has to do the work
somebody
first.
Somebody has to
forge the path.
Yeah.
And so it's not like, oh, look, Soho.
Exactly. Like, that didn't get planned ahead of time.
Oh, look, Yale Town.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was an initial, there was an innovator, cultural provocateur, because I know Warren's listening and he's sending me emails and I'm trying to read and talk at the same
time. Stop it.
We're
trying not to look at screens.
I know. And then once that kind of gains momentum, then the rest can sort of adjust to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the trendy districts have always kind of, that's kind of the cycle. So a creative innovator moves into an area, transforms an industrial building into an artist space. It becomes trendy. Coffee shops open up, restaurants open up, apartments, condos, everything gets revitalized. And then all of a sudden it's too expensive for the artists and they have to find a new area.
They have to keep moving on. I mean, in a way, that's what can happen professionally too. You know, you went to that neighborhood, you figured out that model, and now you're like, okay, this model's working, and I got to go to the next neighborhood.
And
in a way, that's what we're doing. We're saying, I'm ready for a new neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess we are.
I think so.
And it's like renovating your house, too. You know, once you kind of get done a certain...
Because it's never done.
No, it isn't. But if you when you get finished a house, like if you've, you've probably... No, not very many people I know have finished their house.
Is not finished.
Yeah. But when you do finish a house, because I've never actually experienced that.
I don't think anybody has.
Well, I know I have a couple of people that I think have kind of finished. Anyway, except, you know, that final thing
are
that happens when you sell it.
Are you sure they're not just urban myths?
But you feel the desire to start again.
Yes.
There's a thing that makes you like,
renewal and rebirth. Oh, here we go. Now we're talking about spring again.
Yeah.
It's spring.
So maybe by nature, maybe you don't have to necessarily be in the creative industry. By nature, all humans want to be challenged to create.
Yes.
And so we are always finding the thing to make us, you know, push ourselves. Yes. Anyway, so so that's very likely what's happening. But today's world, it's a very, because we have to push ourselves and learn a lot of technological things in order to be part of this retail space that is the ether world.
Yeah, I mean,
world.
Learn. I mean, I think just tool up.
You know? Tool up, she says.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Well, no, because they have so many more tools than... It's not a burden. It's an opportunity.
Yeah, except
painters used to have to make their own brushes, for heaven's sake.
I know.
And make
grind
your own
pigment.
Right?
I know.
You know?
Yeah. So, I know there's lots of... I mean, there's... It's easy to be... but okay, hold on. Okay. I'm just going back up a sec. So the marketing aspect of art has always been a problem.
Yes.
Because artists like to just be producers
it feels
sellers.
Like prostitution in a way, like I shouldn't have to
sell
my soul.
Yeah. Well, and that
to earn a living.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's another sort
but that's
of aspect
a romanticized,
of this is the sellout.
Yeah.
Right? Like
selling is selling out.
Yeah. At what point do you stop thinking about how to feed yourself and start thinking about art for art's sake, right? And how important is the thing you're producing if you're just actually making it like commercially available to this gallery that knows that it'll have 10 people lined up to buy that thing. So God, it's really a complicated kind of purpose
and
versus
Picasso was a genius marketer because you could argue that his cohort or his colleagues were more quote unquote talented than him.
Yeah.
But he was better at the marketing piece.
Yeah.
Right?
Then you go back to Van Gogh.
Yeah.
He didn't sell a thing while he was alive, despite his brother being an art dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it's, you
so,
can't, there's no rules, man.
No rules, man.
Things change. Things evolve. The society has always treated artists in a ever changing, not predictable way. You can never feel like, okay, now we're honored and valued in society. No, it's never been such and it probably never will be.
And, you know, plumbers could say the same thing. But I mean, I guess that's what I'm challenging is why should artists be more important?
Well, yeah, you're right. They aren't. They aren't more important. Nobody is more important.
Nobody's more important.
No.
You know? But the creative piece, I don't know, maybe the art world has tried to co-opt it. Like, that's ours. We're the creative ones. Really, we're, you know, that creative, the creativity aspect needs to filter into every single line of, every single craft.
Yeah.
Regardless. Medicine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Law, teaching.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So how do we embrace that? And is it through leadership and thinking in terms of we're not artists, we're creative entrepreneurs, innovators. I mean, a lot of this is buzzy word stuff.
I know, but we still, it gets back to the same thing, and that is education.
Yes.
If you put all the emphasis on the three R's, the one of which isn't even spelled properly, then you're not going to...
I never thought about that.
You're not going to reward innovation, reward right. creative thinking.
Yeah.
So...
Compliance,
we have to start,
complacency, yeah, mediocrity.
We have to start at the beginning.
Yeah, you have to
rewarding creativity and rewarding new thinking, new ideas.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah,
it's true.
Because
okay, I do quickly want to read one thing that Warren sent.
Oh, okay.
And specific to young people, because I think this is the conversation they need to hear, or I'd like to, you know, share with them. But so this is a quote. If you're a young person with an entrepreneurial spirit who aspires to succeed, not only in business but in life, your mission is not to sedate but to awaken, to disturb, to communicate, to command, to instigate, and even to provoke. So you can be a cultural provocateur.
Yeah.
That's it's true that in our market, in our labor market scans, we know that there's more part-time work, there's more self-employment. They're called the precariat, right? So it's precarious work. Mm. So I don't know from 1 month to the next whether I'll have any work. Now that I've gone on air to say, I don't really want to do websites anymore. Doesn't mean I don't want to do them. It doesn't mean that I don't want to code them. I want to find the expert to do it,
yeah,
so that I can focus on what I want, I'm good at.
Exactly. Right? I feel the same way about like working at the art center.
Yes.
It's not like I'm joyously, passionately doing grant applications. I cannot say that's my passion and that I love it. I do it because it's important. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm benefiting a whole lot of people by doing it. And so I do it. Mm-hmm. But it's not my passion.
No. No, I'm very good at doing the dishes, but I'm not passionate about it.
But there's have to
and
things.
I wipe a mean counter, let me tell you.
So I guess ultimately we're talking about the consumerism versus producerism.
Yes.
And the creatives as being part of all industry and not just as the capital A artist.
Yes, yes, yes.
And adaptability and evolution and expertise.
This isolationist thing, like I'm going into the arts, or I'm going into tech, or I'm going into mathematics, I'm going to science. Hello, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
So, and I really feel like the cross-discipline piece.
That's the future.
It's coming. It's happening.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it at school district, you know, I'm seeing it on Interior Health. I'm seeing it, you know, it's happening.
It's happening.
Yes.
Okay.
And now, as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, sort of sticking with the retail part of our discussion today.
That's right.
So Barbie, the very well-known, tall, blonde.
Yeah,
I've got three ribs.
Yeah, iconic.
Doll.
Iconic.
Absolutely.
Symbol.
Yeah, over 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't suppose you ever saw that video, Cougar Barbie.
No, no.
It was really nasty. Don't watch it. there is a development on the Barbie front, so to speak.
Do tell.
Well, Mattel has announced that they're changing Barbie. They're creating three new body types.
We have new body types.
There's going to be three Shocking. Different body types.
So I don't have to stand up on my tippy-tippy toes anymore?
No, and remove eight of your ribs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and remove all evidence of giving birth and all that stuff. No.
I did love Barbie.
So there's the three body types are curvy, tall, and petite.
Oh.
Yeah, you should see the pictures, actually. It's kind of the curvy is lovely.
And different skin tones.
Yes, and then there's seven different skin tones.
Yes,
and there's 22 different eye colors.
Wow,
and 24 different hairstyles.
Look at that.
Yeah, we're talking diversity.
Wow, because it's 2016.
Because it's 2016, and it's the purpose was to make the Barbies more reflective of mm-hmm. the girls that other women that girls see around them in the world.
Mm-hmm.
However, so that's dramatic enough. But a lot of people are saying that it is still sending the wrong message
mm-hmm.
because it is still saying that beauty is the thing that we should be striving for.
Skin deep. Plastic deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that we don't even know. Like, it's one thing to say, yes, they're being all diverse and taking all the skin colors and making, you know, lots of different representations of beautiful women all over the world. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what effect this has on the women of non-white color, right? Like, how do they feel about being portrayed in a way that's not necessarily culturally true to their ideas of beauty, right?
Right.
This is still just Barbie beauty with a different skin tone and a different eye color, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's a lot
But it is still a creative, disruptive extension of...
Yeah. But after this many years, like 53 or 55 years,
whatever it
took been...
It took them years to do this.
Holy, yeah. That's big.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty big.
I do too.
Yeah. And there's...
I loved Barbie.
Well,
did you have Barbies?
I had Barbies. I still have Barbies.
Barbie Barbies or... I mean, there are lots of imitation Barbie. I had lots of dolls.
I think that... I don't remember having this Barbie, but somewhere in my family, there was a Barbie with a deeper skin tone and dark brown hair.
Yeah.
So I know that they existed way back. It's just that the blonde, tall Barbie has always been the standard.
It's true.
Barbie.
And it is, yeah. No, it's...
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. It's a cultural icon. Mm-hmm. And so we try, and I certainly couldn't identify with a tall blonde.
No.
Right? Because but I'm a short brunette.
Partly, I don't remember ever having any issues with this, right? But also being born white, that's a privilege that is not, I mean, it just makes it really hard for us to say, that doesn't represent me.
Mm.
So I'm like, oh, I'm a white girl, whatever, right? Like we just, it's kind of a, yeah.
It's the majority minority piece too, right? If you don't know what it means to be a minority. See, I know what it means to be a minority. So I feel like that changes my perception.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm a English person in a French group, and other times I'm a French person in an English group, right? So once you learn the minority majority conversation is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, for sure.
But
it's hard to. Yeah, but it's. Oh, yeah. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion.
It's true. But it depends whether you're part of the Barbie majority or not.
Yeah.
That would change your, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just that I didn't grow up in a time when corporate control was so big, right? We have way more imaging problems within, growing
Barbie's
up.
The least of my concerns.
There's
other toys than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having girls growing up, like we had Bratz dolls to deal with and like things that made makeup and skanky clothing look really appealing for little girls, right?
Well, and having boys, there were a lot of things I wanted to buy that, you know, I felt that they were sort of a pretty clearly culturally marked as a girl thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like dolls or kitchen toys or certain books.
Yep.
So
did you
I hope that you know, even toy makers are in our position where they're going, you know, I don't think I want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I think we need to go to the next thing.
It's like a responsibility thing.
Yes.
Some switch in their brain has
gone. Yeah, and we have to evolve to the next thing. We're all capable of it. Disruptive, creative. Yeah.
And I hope so.
I think it I mean,
because we can't do something
glass half full
just because we've always done it that way, right?
Because we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
That is killer on culture, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a death sentence because we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
Yeah.
Although I do like it, like pilots always have a checklist and they always go through the checklist every single flight. I like that. Sometimes it's, you know, those standards, you know, hospitals, sometimes these are good things, so I shouldn't, you know, discount it totally, I guess. But it's more about total quality management. Like you're always trying to improve something.
Yeah.
And not just because it's going to save money or it's going to...
It's not just about efficiency.
Yeah.
It's about being smarter.
Totally.
And using our resources better.
Yes.
Right? And being able to... Yeah, value things and say, well, I'm not going to waste this.
Sure, and to keep solving for X. Like, we can make this better. We can make this better. It's innovation for innovation, and we're very good at that. Like, we innovate, the crap out of stuff for nothing. Like, you know, bling on your phone and things that hang from your car window. And, I mean, we like to innovate, but sometimes we innovate for
just for the sake of innovation. I think we need to be innovating for the sake of actual improvement, improving the quality of human life, right? Which, I don't know. I mean, I like my cell phone case, but I don't know that it needs to be blinged up, or I'm not sure I need a flag out of, you know, on my car, or reindeer earrings or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So we need to be mindful of,
absolutely,
like, just, you know, use your power for good. And we all have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is a thing of mine too, that about art making, I'm being very careful about not producing too much. I want to make sure that I'm not making more stuff, right? No. And I think that's another problem with the artist category, is that, production might be not mindful.
It's true.
We're just making stuff because we, like, oh, I want to
make
stuff, and the paint stores are, you know, got a sale on. I don't know, right? Yeah. Like, there's the craftiness aspect of this is a little bit out of control, right? Like, if you're stressed, you need something to relax. Instead of going to yoga, you go buy some craft materials and make stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, well, okay, let's think about this. What is happening to that stuff?
It's true.
Mm-hmm. It's a big, I mean, I'm
no, it sounds I'm not like you're innocent. And I wouldn't say that you're walking away necessarily as you're walking towards something else.
Yeah.
But I get that. Like, when the boys were little and the call would come from school, can we please have milk cartons and toilet paper tubes and macaroni and oh, my least favorite, styrofoam trays for a craft at school, I would always think, what am I going to do with that? Like, it's never going to go away.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes me cruel and unloving as a parent. I mean, I kept the best of them and recycled what I could. And I guess pictures, I don't know.
I know. I think that's a constant issue. I've been in other people's houses with little kids that have kept everything.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with that stuff?
At least toilet rolls can be recycled.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
And styrofoam too, I guess, now. Yeah. But
so you can pull apart artwork.
Yeah.
And recycle it in its bare bones effort, for the most part. Except paint. Acrylic paint is plastic. You are buying and using and creating plastic objects when you're painting with acrylic paint.
Yes.
Oil, not that much different, right? You're just...
So I mean, watercolors, where's that?
Well, yeah, because paper can be totally recycled. Watercolor is almost all pigment.
I wonder if Anonymous is a watercolor painter.
Well, that's an interesting subject, too,
because... maybe he's a potter, or she's a potter.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm thinking about. The creative
fiber artist.
Could be.
Yeah. Well, I hope one day we find
fiber out. Artists are doing really wonderful things in terms of upcycling.
Yes.
I know people who go to the thrift store, buy old sweaters, unravel them.
Perfect.
Re-spin the yarn into something new.
Wow.
Knit something new.
Absolutely.
I know. So they're being very efficient.
Well, there's assembly line, disassembly line. It's a big circle.
Yeah, right? It is.
Yeah.
And we just need to encourage it. I think we need to recognize it when it's happened. Recognize those people as being innovative.
Yes.
Saying thank you. Mm-hmm. And purchasing their products.
Yes.
Right? Like, and support it with your dollar.
That's it. And these conversations with
With your dollar.
With your dollars.
Yeah.
I hope you're tuned in and having a good time, because we sure enjoy this.
Yeah, we do. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. And it is leisure. It's a hobby, but we're trying to be helpful in some way.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think it's just important to keep talking about these things, because we're changing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, especially artists, find themselves pretty isolated and aren't necessarily talking with other artists about deep subjects.
and aren't challenged to reconsider their approach.
Yeah.
Which is not to assume that their approach isn't right. It just means, as an artist, it's not just about, you know, what you put on the canvas. It's also about the headspace and what else can I do, and, you know.
Yeah. How else can I help the world?
What more can I learn? How else can I help, right?
Yes. Are you helping the world?
Yeah, and that is our single most important. People always say, city should do this, or you guys should do that, or you get it all the time. You know what you guys should do?
You know what you should do?
But really, the single most important community development tool is our ability to help and our ability to ask for help.
Yeah.
That's my view.
Yeah.
Doesn't get any simpler than that.
Yeah. Nice.
Right?
Okay, let's just take a quick moment to say that if you want to find arts events information, you should check our website, salmonarmartcenter.ca, under participate. a listing by date of all the things going on in the next little while. I want to point out that when the film festival starts this month on February 19th, I think it opens, Real Lunch at the Gallery is going to be Sunday only.
I know.
Shocking.
Change.
That's great.
Oh my gosh.
Disruptive innovation.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, there's a lot of places open on Saturday, so there is Sunday.
It is, and it's fine. And we can't, it's hard to have two programs running at the same time. Family Saturdays is getting busier and busier, so we need to do this. There's less theaters, you know, like there's only one theater providing a movie.
No, it's a great solution.
It's great. We're excited. And then anything else, you can also keep up to date on our Facebook page, Sam and our Mart Center on Facebook. And on Twitter. I mean, there's just lots of ways to keep in touch now. But
or just come visit.
Yeah.
Go old school. Come on down.
Yep. The members show right now at the gallery is on Tuesday to Saturday, 11 till 4.
It's beautiful.
A wonderful show. Beautiful. You're welcome.
Just come in. Come and see it. No appointment necessary.
That's right. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Take care.